You're listening to Mind Games, presented by E3Wealth.com.
And we are back with Maureen O'Connor McGinn. Maureen, you were talking about the importance of the research that PBIS is based upon. Can you talk a little bit about how these programs are received in a school initially when you first come in to work with the staff?
Well, I have to say that in some situations when a school district takes on a PBIS initiative, there is a little bit of moaning and groaning sometimes around, oh no, here's another thing on our plate.
Right.
But I think what people see over time is that they actually gain some really effective strategies for addressing both behavioral and academic success. A lot of teachers, I think, need some brushing up on their understanding of behavior management and mm-hmm. how their behavior really impacts student behavior.
Do we need to do more or a better job in educating educators before they hit the classroom as far as classroom management is concerned? Because I know that when I was growing up, if I got in trouble and I was sent to the principal's office, mm-hmm. I knew who my parents were going to support. It wasn't going to be me. They might listen to my side of the story, and I've said this before in the air, but I knew without a doubt where their support was going to be. That's changed.
Yeah, that has changed.
So now I'll hear from teachers, you know, they feel like they're alone on an island. They've got all these parents coming at them. They're expected to do so many different things, make accommodations for kids with learning disabilities and challenges. But I just, to me, it would be overwhelming to be a teacher these days.
Oh.
Do they need more help before they even hit the classroom?
Well, I think they do. I think I personally wish there was more of an emphasis of an understanding of behavior and behavior management, classroom management at the university level, but certainly ongoing professional learning. You know, teachers like me, I mean, you know, I've been at it for years, and what I learned back at UMSL in 1973, you know, had some of the research has changed around behavior and classroom management. So making sure that professional learning opportunities exist in school systems around the understanding of behavior and classroom management, the deal is it really improves students' academic success.
And there's research to support that.
Yeah, there really is.
So there's research that shows that PBIS is effective.
That it's having a huge impact on students' academic success.
Okay, now when we talk about positive behavior intervention and support, does that mean that every single positive thing a child does in a classroom has to be reinforced on the spot?
Absolutely not. But don't you believe that kids thrive in a system where their positive behaviors, whether it's academic behavior or how they behave in the lunchroom or on the playground, that that's recognized and that those kids are celebrated in some way? I mean, I think that positive recognition is something that people don't understand. I think more people understand punishment. What they don't understand is that punishment alone is not going to change a kid's behavior.
Mm-hmm. And let me talk about this from the standpoint of an after-school program that New Dimensions, the nonprofit organization that I'm connected with, has been involved with. We work at a city school, after-school program, 2 hours, twice a week, 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids spend an hour playing soccer while the other, we break the group down into two groups. An hour for one group is spent playing soccer while the other group is in a classroom learning life skills. Then we switch, and they come to me, that group then comes to me in the gym, and I'm doing the soccer instruction. But every day we start off with, what are our rules? And the number one rule is, if I'm talking, you're not. You're listening. And I deliver that in a firm, no-nonsense way. And I look at that as modeling and delivering a strength to the kids. But once we start to play soccer, I'm walking around. I'm citing positive things that kids are doing. At the same time, though, when somebody's goofing around, they're called out on it right on the spot. But what I want the kids to know, and I don't know that I necessarily want them to fear me, but a little bit of fear I don't think is a bad thing, as long as the kids know that there's greater care involved as well, too. So I try to strike a balance. But to me, it's an old-fashioned approach.
Well, and I think what is an old-fashioned approach is to say it up front. Here's what I expect from you. Here's the rules. You know, and do it in a way that lets kids know this is the expectation. You're not going to get around it. Sometimes a teacher standing alone in a classroom in a school maybe that has a lot of disruptive classrooms going on around her, she doesn't have that system. It's just her alone. Kids got to wonder, you know, can you really walk the walk and talk the talk? When you've got all the teachers standing up and saying the same things, and I love the idea that you reminded kids of the behaviors that you wanted from them, gave them that little pre-correct, we know that more kids are going to behave correctly when you remind them of what the rules are.
You were talking off the air about in school settings, the importance of that consistency in terms of the modeling, that a school might have a no cell phone policy, but here's an adult walking down the hall.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and I've been in situations where, you know, that was one of the behaviors that we would look at the data, and a lot of kids were being sent to the office for cell phone violations, pulling them out in the hallway or keeping them in their coat pocket instead of putting them in their locker where they should have been. And then you see adults walking around the hallways with their cell phones out. So adults really need to be clear about their behavior and their beliefs about that issue. If it's not an issue, don't expect kids to do it. If it's an issue, then adults have to model it too.
So, as I listen to you talk, what's running through my mind is I come back to the creation of a particular kind of context. And I've said this on the air more than once, that as a counselor, as a therapist, I've come to believe that my thoughts and my feelings about the client impact the process. How I'm feeling towards that person as I walk in the room with them, I may not state it verbally, but I think in some way they're going to know that. Do we have a lot of teachers that still need, and administrators that still need to get that message, that how you feel about your kids, how you think about your kids, are going to be known by those kids?
Exactly. And, you know, I just think that there's a lot of people a lot of teachers in the system who aren't behavior experts, and so they want to discipline their students the way perhaps they were disciplined as students, as kids, or the way they discipline their own kids. Research shows that that's not really an effective way, and it's not a systemic approach.
Mm-hmm.
So adults' belief in behavior and belief in their students' ability to behave according to the community expectations, if you believe it, you're starting off on the right foot.
Okay, now you're really getting into my wheelhouse here. When you talk about belief and connecting belief with performance. So it has to start with the belief top down at the higher level.
Right. And I think it has to start actually with the belief that we should be implementing what research shows us works.
Okay.
I mean, if you had a doctor who knew of some research for the past 15 years and had decided, I think I'm just going to keep doing it the same old way, you'd probably switch to a different physician.
But I'm guessing you still run into teachers that say, I don't care what the research says.
Well, exactly. And mostly they don't know what the research says. Professional development time needs really to be allotted so teachers can really understand the impact of the context of the school setting. So as a behaviorist, you can change the context in which the behavior occurs, or you can change the way you respond to the behavior. You can't really change the kid. You can change the way you respond to it, and you can change and try to prevent it.
One of the things that I learned early on in my career as a therapist from one of my mentors was, when you change the context, behaviors change.
Exactly, because behaviors do occur in a context. Behavior is specific to a context. So part of the challenge as a PBIS coach is when you look at a school's data and you say, oh my gosh, your data is showing that a huge number of kids are tardy every day. You've got to change the context. You have to get teachers out in the hallway. You have to change the system so that kids know.
But isn't that a problem at home? I mean, how do you reach out to those parents if a child's consistently tardy? You can have the teachers in the hallway, but if the child's not there, they're not there.
If they're not there. But, and again, you know, the other thing we know about behavior management in the school setting is that engaging academic instruction, getting those kids to want to get in your classroom, getting those kids to feel like, I want to get in there on time because something's going to happen that I really want to be a part of.
Okay.
You know, that's changing the context.
We do see that in this program, in the after-school program. When the kids found out that we weren't going to be there, I think it was like December 21st or something like that, they were really bothered that we weren't going to be there for that day. But that was the last day for school before the break. So we see the positive effect of that strength balanced with care as being effective. But there's one other thing that I want to get to that I thought was just awesome. You're talking about this extending into the community. You talked about a 7-Eleven store having posted the same expectations for those students at the nearby school.
Exactly.
That was awesome.
Exactly. So, you know, part of the work that I was doing in North County was, you know, looking at different schools. And a lot of schools will have as their school-wide expectations, they want kids to be respectful. Well, we can define in the school setting what respect looks like in the school setting. But what was really popular was when the principal reached out to the community, he was actually looking for the community to make some contributions so that they could buy some reinforcers for kids, you know, get some things on board in the school that kids would, you know, actually kind of work for.
Mm-hmm.
And the community started to say, how can we be part of this too? So, you know, schools hang up a poster really defining what respect looks like in the school. These community businesses started to define respect in their setting. So respect in the 7-Eleven might be you take off your backpack and leave it by the door when you walk in the store. And there were some little store owners up in North County, I know, who were giving kids little coupons, little things when they were following the rules in their
in
store.
In St. Louis.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This is extending into the community. I want to welcome Rob back in with us. Rob, your thoughts about what you're hearing?
Well, first of all, I think this is great, and this is really kind of what we've always talked about, is kind of getting back to that simpler life where life gets so complicated for teenagers and young people. But my question for you is really, you know, how has some of this been received by some of the old guards, some of these old brown boot teachers who just, this is the line, and that's they're not going to budge. Do you kind of get some blowback from the more seasoned veteran educators on this kind of thing?
You know, sometimes you do, but I have to say that sometimes it seems to me that the longer you're in education, the more you're looking for what do I need to put in my bag of tricks. And I think most seasoned educators, if you're in it, you have figured out pretty early on that you've got to be positive with kids. You have to like kids. You have to believe in kids. You have to tell them exactly how you want them to behave, and you got to recognize it when they do it. So there are some seasoned educators who are totally behind it. When we go into school systems, you can pretty much count that, you know, there's going to be a group of people who are going to say, not buying this.
Sure. You know, we are heading towards the end of our show here in about 30 seconds. And what we do, Maureen, on the show is we try to wrap things up with the bottom line. And I think what I'd like to say is that, you know, the world has changed. And you have to get on board. And you have to know more. You have to be willing and open to learn. And it's something that we talk about consistently. So I think the information that you're giving us today, the insights that you're giving us today have been awesome, especially that part about reaching out to the community. So thanks so much for joining us, Maureen O'Connor-McGinn,
on
Mind Games.
Me.
We are over and out.